Coming up on This Week in Radio Tech, Mark Johnson is with us talking about the C-band repack. Does it affect you? Well, if you're a broadcaster, radio or TV, it probably does. What's the right thing to do? Mark's going to show us. Coming up next on TORT. This Week in Radio Tech is brought to you by Broadcasters General Store, with outstanding service, savings, and support, online at bgs.cc. By Broadcast Bionics, with the Bionic Studio, including talk show control, social media, and visual radio, Broadcast Bionics brings exceptional audience engagement to radio and TV. By Angry Audio. Audio problems disappear when you get angry at angryaudio.com. And by MaxConnect Wireless, prioritized high-speed internet service designed for transmitter sites and remote broadcasts. Hey, welcome into This Week in Radio Tech, the show where we talk about everything from the microphone to the light bulb at the top of the tower. And this week, we're talking about satellite and the C-band repack. We've mentioned this before, but it's coming upon us. In fact, there's action that you and I need to take in order to get ready for it. Mark Johnson with LinkUp is going to be our guest in just a minute. I'll bring him in, and we'll talk about the C-band repack. And believe me, whether you're in radio or whether you're in TV, there's stuff you got to do. Otherwise, you could be in real deep stuff. Our show This Week in Radio Tech is brought to you by some great sponsors. I hope you pay attention during the show and visit them either on the web, call their representatives, give them a little business, because they are helping us out to bring the show to you. I'm live today in the Telos Alliance studio in Nashville, Tennessee. It's a beautiful day here in Nashville. Wish I could do the show from outside, but it's nice and quiet in here. Let's bring in Mark Johnson, our guest. Mark is somewhere probably in Mark, are you in Florida? Is that where you are, buddy?
Absolutely. Panama City, Florida.
And oh, you live in Panama City. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. That's why Captain Anderson's is always a hot spot for you and I and Charlie Wooten.
Well, I saw you there.
And Charles Kinney.
Yep. And Charles. Well, see, Charles has to travel to get there to Captain Anderson, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And we invite everybody down to Panama City and come to Captain Anderson's and all the great restaurants we have on the beach.
Sorry for the inside baseball, folks, but Captain Anderson's is a fantastic, fantastic restaurant. And I got to have dinner there one night with Charlie Wooten, who's been a guest on the show, and also with Mark Johnson, who's our guest today on the show. So I thought I heard that Captain Anderson's closed for a while during COVID. Did they?
No. They usually close between like after Thanksgiving and before Valentine's Day, so they're always kind of closed in that period. But no, they've been open. Other than
good
that,
good deal. Yeah, hey, Mark, season. Before we get, tell you what, give us a little hint. Give us the elevator speech. Why do we need to listen to what you have to say today? First of all, you got some great pictures. You got a lot of great things to show and tell about amazing satellite installation stories and aiming and interference and all that. But what's the other big reason that people need to pay attention?
Well, the big reason you need to pay attention to 5G transition, the C-band repack, is because your content is coming in, whether it's radio or television, your content's coming in and has been for 35 years coming in via that C-band downlink. But with 5G coming on and using up 60% of that bandwidth and those frequencies, you've got to prepare your C-band dish or have someone prepare it for you so that you protect that content delivery system. It's flexible, it's reliable, and that C-band system is also cost effective because it doesn't cost you something every month. It's being paid for by the content provider, whether that's a radio network or a television network. And your responsibility is to protect that downlink. And with 5G coming on in the top 46 markets and Panama City by December 5th, those markets need to be ready right away. And then they'll be followed up by the rest of the markets that broadband will go after.
We're going to jump into some details on that and why it's so important for broadcast engineers to do that. Hey, I've got a couple of announcements to kick off the show here before we Mark starts some great show and tell. One of those things is Radio Guide Magazine. This is a fantastic publication. I read it every month, and one reason, or every other month, it comes out six times a year. One of the cool things about Radio Guide is that Ray Topp, the publisher, takes the idea that engineering articles should be a bit longer. They should go into a bit more depth. And some of these articles are well, they're plenty long. Here's an article by George Zahn. Here's an article by Greg Skull. He's a member of the Telecommunications Law Professionals. Is your website privacy compliant, for example? Not just nuts and bolts articles, but articles about intellectual property law and such as that. So there's something for everybody in here. Radio Guide, it's online too at radio-guide.com. I want to thank Ray Topp for participating with This Week in Radio Tech and helping to advertise our show. So good magazine. You should get this. Go online to radio-guide.com. And the other thing that we got to bring up here is our friends at Nautel. They got a couple of promotions and the webinars start back up again. They took off last Tuesday, I believe, this past Tuesday, but they're going to be starting back up again. We're going to tell you about the couple of promotions that are going on at Nautel. One of them is the limited time offer for a free second backup exciter. And the way that promotion works is you buy a GV series transmitter and you, for free, you get a second, you get a backup exciter. You could call it a second exciter. You could call it a backup exciter. Maybe it is a second backup exciter. Would that be three exciters altogether? So there's one promotion right there from Nautel, the GV series second backup exciter. There's another promotion that may be more applicable to a lot of us who maybe need a smaller transmitter. It's called the 4610 VS savings offer. You get $4,000 off a VS 2.5 transmitter. I got one of those. Works great. Also, you can get $6,000 off the VS HD. That's the HD box that goes in front of the VS 2.5. Or if you buy both, well, yeah, they add those together because it's math and you can get $10,000 off of both of those. Go to Nautel.com/offers, Nautel.com/offers to take a look at either one of those promotions. Now, the other thing to tell you about is the Transmission Talk Tuesday roundtable discussions. These aren't just webinars. These are roundtables. And that means that if you're in the audience, you're welcome to ask a question and the experts will try to answer that for you. Jeff Welton may just call on you if he sees you there. So, you know, if you want to be safe, you know, type in some other name. But you can register right now for the three webinars that are going to be, or the roundtable discussions that will be offered in July. On July 13th, it's the webinars, the roundtable, I should say, is about RDS and RBDS, radio data system and radio broadcast data system. We'll be talking about that. The guest is going to be Tony Peterly from WorldCast Systems. Then on July 20th, Transmitter Site Quirks is the name of that that Transmission Talk Tuesday. And the 27th is the RF Toolkit. There's a terrific planning tool or set of planning tools on the Nautel website, and you can learn all about how to use that most effectively, the RF Toolkit. Go to Nautel.com/webinars and click on Transmission Talk Tuesday. They're really easy to sign up for. You'll get a reminder email of that it's coming up. And yeah, be sure you attend. It's good. I try to attend every one of them and I get to most of them. Transmission Talk Tuesday from Nautel. All right. Our guest is Mark Johnson with Link Up Communications. Mark, okay, for those who don't know, give us just the elevator speech about what Link Up is all about.
Well, Link Up's about content delivery. The idea that most broadcasters and some institutions need assistance with content delivery. So it's getting audio or video or even data point to point, point to multipoint, most typically when using satellite. But the concept is, you know, somebody to come alongside an engineer or a general manager and a network manager and help you determine what are the best content delivery solutions that work for your network. And that can go from equipment to space segment to terrestrial. So however we can help you get content point to multipoint, that's our job.
So during the show, we're going to be talking about this C-band repack. But I'd like to hit that because there's important reminders and things that engineers have got to do, especially if you're in certain markets. But I'm kind of interested in starting off with these pictures that you have to share and we can learn a bit about what you do. Maybe we'll throw some C-band repack in with those, whatever you like to do.
So those pictures are all about the C-band repack and some of the moves and some of the filters we've installed and really what we can do is walk the folks through what you should do because there is a timeline, and that timeline is set by the FCC. There's not going to be any change. They've established a deadline for the top 46 markets plus Panama City, Florida, because of Hurricane Michael. That those markets will have 5G probably turned on, you know, December 5th at midnight. I mean, these people paid $90 billion for the largest frequency auction in history, and that's just what they paid for the top 46 markets plus Panama City. So
I think it's worthwhile to point out, I know a lot of us broadcasters, and I was in a number of meetings at the SBE when we made comments back to the FCC about the C-band, the takeover of half or more of the C-band, and we came back with some, comments about how we thought it should be done, which was a little bit different than how it did get done. It's hard to be, as a broadcast engineer who depends on C-band satellite for so many programs that my radio stations take, it's hard to be excited about what's going on here. However, I realize that the C-band 5G frequencies have not yet been, are not being used yet because the repacks, hasn't commenced yet. But, I feel like such a Luddite. I felt like this phone right here, good old iPhone, it's on 4G LTE. I thought that the speeds I was getting were just fine. I was okay with it. Mm-hmm. And then I was sitting down with a friend, and my friend had a 5G phone, a brand new iPhone 12, and I did a speed test on it. And I was getting at this location about 21 megs down and about 5-6 megs up, and I was okay with that. That's fine. Mm-hmm. And on their 5G phone, they did speed test over a gig down.
The only folks really doing 5G right now are T-Mobile in the 600 meg range, and then there is some markets where AT&T and Verizon are using the space just below C-band. So actually, I've talked with some engineers who've already started to see interference on their C-band downlink because the L-band, the LNB that sits out there is really open. So it really does amplify stuff that's down below 3.7. And so if it's close enough, it can be a little bit of a problem. And that's in a lot of markets. I mean, even the markets that aren't supposed to be getting the mid-band repack, like Honolulu. I was talking to the engineer for Gray TV out there, and we were at a EMF site, and you could actually see on the spectrum analyzer signals down in that 3.5 to 3.6 range, which will start to cause you problems. So, so that's even in some of the markets that are not part of the mid-band, repack. The filters are going to be important for them as well.
This phone happened to be on Verizon. I noticed that we were across the street from a Verizon store, so I'm pretty sure they made sure they had really good speed there at the store.
that's what they did after Hurricane Michael. They said, we're bringing in these temporary towers because we lost a ton of towers. We lost the entire power grid. 7,000 utility poles in Bay County alone had to be replaced. They brought a portable cell phone site, and they stuck it in front of the Verizon store, which did customers very little good.
Nobody lives at the Verizon store.
And of course, AT&T FirstNet was out at the emergency management place. So, unless you were out in the woods, you couldn't use FirstNet either. So.
Oh, wow. Well, okay.
Hurricane Michael was a disaster.
Let's jump into our pictures with the first graphic. Suncast, what you got here?
Okay, so this is the key milestones. The schedule is laid out by the FCC, and we've jumped through all of those first things all the way through the auction, which was back in December of 2020. And that $90 billion is what's going to fund. If you took the lump sum, you're going to get that $8,950. That's coming out of that auction money. If you stayed in the repack, like one of our customers in upstate New York who had a very old antenna, it was probably a 3 meter instead of a 3.7. It was probably 25 years old, and they didn't take the lump sum. They stayed in, and SES made sure that the entire antenna was replaced, new cable, you know, brand new antenna, 3.7, bigger, better than what they started out with, and cost them a dime. So that's where the money from that auction is going. And then we're in that area between the auction and the accelerated phase one deadline, which is December 5th, 2021, which you and I talked about, top 46 PEAs plus Panama City. And what will happen is, even though ultimately broadband's going to get 60% of the bandwidth, this first step, this first accelerated phase one, is only 120 megs. So they'll get 3,700 to 3,820. And the reason that's being done in stages is, yes, those of us in radio, you know, our satellite frequencies have all moved up above 4,000. So, you know, in the last 4 or 5 months, folks may have noticed that their XDS receiver or their Wegner receiver went to a new frequency without them having to change anything. So if you're receiving, you know, talk radio or Westwood One, those all went to new frequencies up above 4,000. That's great for radio because then we only have to put in one filter. But for television, they're not going to be able to compress all of the video signals up above 4,000 until they get 6 or 7 new satellites in place. And that's going to take this next period between now and December 2023, where they've got to get 6 or 7 new satellites up there in locations where either they don't have a C-band or they weren't going to replace the C-band. So, you know, even though we're going to have 200 megahertz ultimately on every satellite, having more satellites gives us a place to put those video carriers. So the video is moving up above 3820 for now. And once those satellites come on board, they'll start moving and clearing that space between 3820 and 4,000. And once that's done, then we'll be in good shape. So that means TV stations will have to get what's called the red filter, which is a, once again, these are all bandpass filters. So what they're doing is they're blocking below, on the red filter, they're blocking below 3820 and above 4200. So they also replace, if you've got like a TI or a radar filter, I know Charlie Wooten has radar filters here in the Panama City area because we've got a lot of military aircraft. So when you put in a 5G filter, you can remove a TI filter or a radar filter because now you've got a filter that's covering both everything above 4200 and then with the red, everything below 3820. So for TV stations, they'll do a red filter this year. But once all of their content moves up above 4 gigahertz, then somebody will need to come back and put in a blue filter. Radio, thankfully, all radio that I'm aware of, you know, all of the networks on SES 11, NPR, the Christian radio on SES 2, EMF on ANIC, F1R, F3 now, all of those are up above 4 gigs. So in radio, we don't have to worry about doing a red filter now and then 2 years from now doing a blue filter. We can just do the blue filter right away. Television, okay. A lot more content, a lot more complicated. And then so ultimately, any protection with registration between 3,700 and 4 gig is going to be sunsetted in December 2025. So that's the key milestones for what we're trying to get accomplished based on what the FCC has given us in their timelines.
Two questions here. One of them is we've been throwing around the word filter quite a bit, and I'm not sure. I've seen pictures of these. I know what they are, and I'm familiar with the old radar filters that people, like you said, Charlie Wooten had to install near military bases because that radar could interfere, with satellite reception. I want to make sure that everybody knows we're not talking about a little bullet shaped filter that goes in the coax cable,
right?
We're not talking about that kind of filter. It'd be neat if you could do it there, but you can't. They're talking about a filter that is physically kind of big and goes at the feed horn as the signal goes into the LNB, right?
Exactly. Between the feed horn and the LNB, that's where it gets inserted. And it's really a waveguide filter is what it is. And when we go through the rest of the pictures, there's actually a picture of one as well and a couple installed.
Question number two is that you said radio stations because their services are already can be compressed up above 4 gigahertz. They just need to get the blue filter. But if you're in one of these 46 PEAs, what does PEA stand for? Do you remember?
Population economic area, I think like that. It's like a market. Yeah, it's a market size.
So it's the markets where they're rolling out 5G in this range. And so if you're a radio station in those markets, go ahead and get the blue filter. If you're a TV station, go ahead and get the red filter, but then you're going to have to change later on to the blue filter.
Yeah? Right. Or if you stayed in, you didn't take the lump sum, someone will come and do those operations for you. Or move you, because there's going to be a lot of moving for television too, where they're going to have to move to a new satellite because, in fact, we had to do it. I think it's Classic Arts Channel or something had moved satellites, and we had to go out to the local college and put on a red filter and move their dish so that they could continue to feed Classic Arts to the in-house institutions.
Gotcha.
Delivery system.
Let's take a look one more picture before we have to take another quick break. So let's see what the next picture is here. Suncast. They get some happy folks at a satellite dish. Yeah. What's going on here?
Yeah. Well, and this is what we're talking about. And you can see Clay's actually got his hand on the filter there. Clay and I are in Texas doing a filter installation. And this is ultimately what you're after, is to get this filter in between the feed assembly and the LNB, and it's all about doing a good job sealing everything up and documenting, and we'll walk through kind of what we put forth as the pieces and parts, so that ultimately all of our customers have the backup documentation in case there's ever a need anytime in the future to an issue between them and a mobile group, or between, or if we wind up being, part of the 10% audit that the FCC is going to do on these installations.
I can't help but look at this picture and think of Mutual of Omaha's Wild Kingdom. And there's Mark Johnson saying, "I'll stay here on the ground while Clay climbs the ladder up to
the exactly. That's right.
This is in Texas. Why is there there's a cover on that satellite dish? Suncast, could you pop that picture back up again?
Yes,
why is there a cover in Texas on the satellite dish?
I've got a customer who's pretty thorough, and they get a little bit of snow down there, and I think this is between Dallas and San Antonio. So I don't know that I would have put a snow cover on it there, but that's what they wanted. So, customer, we just try to do what the customer wants. So
cool. Well, it would have been helpful this past February, probably.
It probably was.
Cold weather. All right. Hey, it's This Week in Radio Tech. I'm Kirk Harnack along with Mark Johnson. We've got 16 more pictures to cover and stories to tell and also things to learn. We got pictures of spectrum analyzer pictures to show you exactly what's going on. So you can be super well informed about the C-band repack and about the filtering that needs to go on. This Week in Radio Tech is brought to you in part by our friends at Broadcast Bionics and Camera One. Hang on, we'll be right back.
Camera One from Broadcast Bionics. Designed to bring video to your audio content. Visualizing radio and podcasts for social media. Camera One can automatically create, capture, and brand professionally switched video for live streaming or upload, making your production shareable. Control and configure using a web browser on any device. Camera One is available as a 4-camera or 8-camera system using the Blackmagic A10 Mini range, including the A10 Mini Extreme. You can use cameras to suit your studio and your budget. You'll need one camera for a studio wide shot, and usually one camera per microphone. A standard multi-channel sound card or IP driver monitors audio from each studio microphone, and we work natively with Axia systems. Ideally, this will be a post-fader feed from each mic, although you can use pre-fade audio or a mic split if that's all you have available. These audio levels are used to intelligently switch the video feed when each contributor is talking. You can also group microphones together into one shot and use the audio from a mixer's aux bus. You can use Camera One's auto switch feature, or disable it and switch using the on-screen buttons or the buttons on the ATEM. Recordings can automatically start when you tell the system you're on the air. This on-air indication can be linked to your studio's red lights via IP or an Avantech Atom GPIO interface. You can quickly browse all the videos that have been automatically created during your broadcast, download them, and post. Camera One is a user-installable system. You'll need a good-spec Windows 10 PC, i7 with plenty of storage, and 16GB of RAM. It's better if this machine isn't used for anything else. Remember, you can control the software in a web browser on another device on your network. Camera One, a thrifty way of creating scroll-stopping video from your show or podcast from Broadcast Bionics.
Thanks so much to Broadcast Bionics for sponsoring the show, and check out their terrific array of products to help broadcasters connect better with their audiences, including Camera One at bionic.radio, bionic.radio. Check them out. Good friends of ours, and they make some super good stuff. All right. Hey, we're talking with Mark Johnson with Link Up Communications. Mark, the website was linkupcommunications.com, right?
That is correct.
Good deal. And you guys are hopping busy, but you'll make room for people.
We're doing our best to fit people in. And if you need to be in between now and December 5th and you need help, we're available and try to do our very best. And, hope that what we talk about today can, help those who are going to try to do this themselves to get a little bit more out of this for themselves. And then, if somebody needs help, this kind of shows them why they need help. But, a lot of people are thinking, I'm just going to, get up there, put a filter on and good to go. I don't think that's probably the best thing for the future of your content distribution.
We got 16 pictures to go. So let's jump right into them here.
Let's walk right in. Okay. So this is the filter. And one of the first things we do when we're on site and we're going to put in a filter, part of the documentation starts right here. We actually take a picture of the serial number of the filter that we're going to put on, and that everything goes into a file for that radio station or that TV station. And so this is the Alga microwave. As far as I understand, and we've been in a lot of meetings with SES and Intelsat and the C-band Alliance, this filter is probably 7-8 generations of adjustments and SES and Intelsat, as the C-band Alliance, spent millions in research and development on this filter. So it's you and I have talked about the TI filter and the radar filter and the stuff that we've had stations for years. This is leaps and bounds of technology above that. They went through, gee whiz, must have been 8 revisions the last time that the CBA met. And the CBA, or Intelsat and SES, gave or worked with ALGA and Microwave Filter Company. So for our money, those are the two that are really legitimate products that that have worked closely with SES and Intelsat. And so that's where we want to stay, is with either the Alga microwave or the microwave filter company.
Okay. All right. What's next?
Yeah. And then the second thing we do when we get on site is we take a dish pointer. I mean, if you've got dish pointer on your iPhone or on your Google phone, whatever type of phone you have, we always take a screenshot of dish pointer. Okay. This, is a little uncomfortable for us because, 118 is what we're looking for, and it's looking right at a guy wire. So part of our documentation is, what does the look angle look like, when we're there on the day? So grab the next one.
So is it easier to move the dish or move the tower?
You might want to move the dish. Okay. My gosh. Yeah. The foundation's a little bit smaller. Let me tell you, concrete has gone up lately.
In all seriousness, will that work, or will that guy wire right in your look angle cause you an issue?
Sometimes it will give you a little attenuation. In that situation, it actually worked out fine, and we didn't have to move the dish. So that worked out fine. One of the other things we take an image of is what popped up there real quick for just a second.
Yeah, I see that.
And you had talked about the XDS receiver, and this is the XDS Pro 1R. And one of the things we do is we take a screenshot of, what the AG is and what the EBNO is. So that's documentation of kind of before and after. So we'll take one before we put the filter on, and then another one after we put the filter on. Those things are kind of critical to what you might need going forward. If you have an issue where Verizon is causing you content delivery problems, then you want to have as much documentation as you can. And it's really not that hard to, take a few pictures, take some screenshots of a sat meter or a spectrum analyzer. And so those are the next things that we kind of keep, as well as pictures of what you're doing.
What thinking about EBNO, EB, energy per bit over noise, what kind of figures should broadcasters be comfortable with, and what should they worry about?
Well, typically with most of the radio networks, the signals are going to get lost somewhere around an EBNO of 5 or 4.5. That's where the XDS receiver or the IDC receiver or the Wegner receiver, that's where they're going to fall out. That's their kind of breaking point, so to speak, and have of around 4.5 to 5. And, with C-band, if you've got a margin of 5, so now your EBNO is around 10, you're doing pretty good. If you're, in the 12 to 13 range, you're great, because now your margin is 8 dB. And typically in C-band, it takes quite a storm to give you 2 or 3 dB of rain fade or attenuation. Now with KU band, you can get 20 dB of attenuation. So you just try to do your best with KU band. Try to get 13s or 14s on KU band. But we're talking about C band, and if you can get 10 to 13, and the other thing you have to remember is, there are contour lines for the satellite. So Nashville is probably where you're at. It's probably going to be a dB, dB and a half higher than we're going to be here in Panama City, Florida, are they going to be in Miami? So
yeah, more toward the center of the bore site, so to speak.
Exactly. Antenna.
So
exactly.
They've got a spectrum analyzer display coming up next, right?
Yeah. Another pre-installation image that we take is, okay, what does the satellite look like? Now this is a MSK 120, or we call it an SM-120 because that's the old name for it. Shamondal used to make this, and we like it because it's got a spectrum analyzer and a sat meter all built in, so we can see levels. So we'll take a screenshot of the spectrum before putting a filter on, and we go to the next shot, and then we'll go and put the filter on. So This is Clay once again. You know, once again, I'm doing the Marlon Perkins thing. And this was in Alaska because we actually had to move some dishes in Alaska and Hawaii. So, you know, that Marlon Perkins thing really kind of goes with this because they warned us about the moose, which there was a lot of moose poop around, and they warned us about the bears. So, you know, so while Clay's on the ladder, I've got a quick path back to the car.
Yeah. Oh gosh. Okay. Next picture.
Yep. And so once you put the filter on, we go back and look at the readings of, you know, what's our signal look like, you know, and then we'll, save images of post installation. And probably before we do that though, we'll adjust azimuth and elevation. I think we've got one of those pictures too, on the Prodelin, doing azimuth and elevation, but there's Karen, doing a little satellite, meter reading on the SM-120.
Gotcha. Good. Yep. What's next here?
This is a Prodelin, and you do all the azimuth and elevation adjustments right there. You've got a lot of bolts to make sure we find ourselves a lot of times going to places where, we're doing a dish somebody else didn't, do and, or somebody else would do. And we'd find some bolts loose and things like that. And that can always be a problem. So after you do an azimuth elevation and a polarization, after you replace the filter and you peak it up, you know, make sure to, I mean, there's a lot of bolts on there that need to be locked down and locked down good because, all it takes is a, you know, 30, 40 mile an hour wind if they're not locked down real well and your content delivery has an issue. You're missing the University of Alabama football game or University of Tennessee football game or, Dan Bongino or something like that. So, Each one of those bolts is important to tighten down after you've done the azimuth and elevation.
Hey, Suncast, keep on this picture for a minute. I got a question about tightening bolts. It seems like a number of times I have peaked up a satellite dish to my total satisfaction, and as soon as I start tightening a bolt, it gets worse.
Yes.
The ebno goes down, and so I'm thinking, okay, I'm sure you got to tighten them, you know, in some kind of order that makes sense so you're not pushing it one way or another. Do you guys have a secret technique or is there something you'd be willing to share about how to avoid that situation?
Yep. And that it happens a lot on this Prodelin antenna and you've probably got one. So you've got several things going on here. Okay. The rod that comes down in front of Clay there is the elevation rod. And what you have to do with it, so that's it, adjusting my elevation. And once I get my elevation, and let's say that, I'm moving the top nut on that elevation rod, which is, you know, right there at the bottom. And then below that is a bottom nut that tightens up on it. Well, you can't just lock, you just can't find it with that top one and then bring that bottom one all the way up. Because once you do that, it's going to put pressure on it and it's going to move that elevation. And you got to think about this. Think about a rifle. You know, we said a rifle. You said bore sight. Let's think about a rifle. So if I have a target that is, you know, 22,000 miles away and I'm pointing a rifle at this target, just the slightest quarter of an inch winds up being several miles off by the time I get to 22,000. So, you know, that happens for elevation and for azimuth. So what we do is we get it on where we want to go, and then we tighten up the bottom bolt a little bit, and then we watch the meter. And we turn both the top and the bottom a little bit at a time. So like a half turn and a half turn while we watch the meter. And if it starts to go down, then we loosen off and bring up the other one. And And it's the same thing with all the other bolts that are remaining. Clay right there is working on the six bolts. They're actually six bolts that hold that azimuth elevation cap onto the pole. And if you tighten one down, it will change elevation. It can change azimuth a little bit if you just tighten one down. So what we do is we do it like you would do, you know, like you're taught to tighten down a tire, lugs on a tire. You know, you move back and forth. You don't tighten one and then tighten one. You do them evenly. Same thing with changing tires. You know, you switch them crossways. So we'll tighten a little bit on this side, watching the meter while we're doing it. Then we'll go to an opposite bottom and then back to an opposite top, and we'll just work our way around a little bit at a time, you know, a turn at a time, and watching the meter. And anytime we see it go down, we'll loosen that one and we'll go to the opposite side and come back. And it's the same thing with there are U-bolts up there on that pole holding the dish to the Azel mount. And it's the same thing with those four nuts on those two U-bolts. You got to do those the same way. I'll start over here, and then I'll go crossways, and then I'll go back, and then I'll go over here, and we'll do them a little bit at a time, and the whole time watching the meter. So for us, locking it down is usually a 15-minute process.
That is amazing. Okay, so I thought it would be a 2 or 3 minute process, which is why I'm messing it up. I can see, and it's important to know when you're tightening a given bolt that you realize, okay, if I do this, it's gonna twang it just a little bit that way. And so got you. Okay, well, that makes sense. Do it just like you would putting on a wheel on your car. Go across, mm-hmm. go opposite, know what you're tightening down. Okay, makes sense.
Yep.
We've got more to share, and that's coming up. I'm Kirk Harnack, along with Mark Johnson with Link Up Communications. They are experts in content distribution, everything from uplinking to the satellite space-time to the downlinking. And right now, they're working on a lot of downlinks with the C-band repack coming in. This Week in Radio Tech is brought to you in part by Broadcasters General Store. I was just talking to Jessica Shute today at Broadcasters General Store. What a great organization. They will absolutely get your products, get your broadcast equipment quoted, lowest prices, tell them to put a sharp pencil on it, and then they can tell you, you know, things like how long will it take to get there and what shipping is available. They'll keep you updated. Well, one of the things that Broadcasters General Store specializes in is a wide range of audio consoles, and one of those is the Broadcast Tools Pro Mix 4. The Broadcast Tools Pro Mix 4. Now, I know it's 2021. That's the year, right? 2021. Would you buy a mono console in 2021? Well, yeah, you would if that's what you needed. If you want a simple console that's great for sports or remotes and doesn't have anything on it you don't need, and yet it has what you do need. What are some of the things that it has that you do need? Well, it has three mic and mono line input channels, and they're universal. They have the XLR with the quarter inch tip ring sleeve in the middle of that, so you can plug a variety of things into them, mic level or line level. You get a monaural balanced line level input as well. You get balanced monaural program output with a defeatable soft clipper. Hey, that clipper is really nice for when your announcer is really talking loud and not watching his levels. It has a built-in USB connection for computer audio playback and computer recording. So it's like having a sound card right there in front of you in the audio console. It's got a mix minus output if you've got a codec to feed, a codec or a phone hybrid. It also has an LED audio output level VU meter. It's bright, so your talent can see it. They shouldn't abuse it, but you know if they do, that's where the soft clipper comes in. It has an IFB audio input with level adjustment. It's got three stereo headphone outputs with independent volume control, plus IFB pan and program pan controls for custom headphone mixes for each person. A line level monaural monitor speaker audio output with switch configurable mic muting. Yeah. You have a speaker there, hit your mic turned on, and it'll mute the speaker. And that's something you don't get with a lot of other small audio consoles. This thing is made for broadcast. It's made for what we do in broadcast. So it's also got that on-air tally warning light relay output, and it can drive multiple of the headphone system called the AHR 1 Plus, multiple of those headphone systems. Really cool. The Broadcast Tools Pro Mix 4 whether you got a small production room, a voiceover studio, you want to have a console you can grab and go out on remote, a remote broadcast as things are opening back up from COVID, bam, just grab this thing and go, along with some headphones, microphone, and maybe a laptop to connect it to. And on your laptop, of course, you can run some codec software that'll get you back to the radio station. Plus, it's great for sports, really built for sports, and it's simple to use. Check it out from Broadcasters General Store. Tell them you want a Broadcast Tools ProMix 4. And you know what? I've got that number memorized at Broadcasters General Store. It's 352-622-7700. Yeah, they got a website, bgs.cc. Yeah, you can look at your equipment there, but give them a call. They are ready with answers for you just right there. 352-622-7700. I've been dialing that number since I was working with Sam Phillips in Memphis, Tennessee, back around 1989 or so. Good folks there at BGS. Thanks a lot for sponsoring the show. I'm here with Mark Johnson with LinkUp Communications. I'm Kirk Harnack in the Telos Alliance studio in Nashville, Tennessee. Mark, we're looking at a bunch of pictures from your various installs, and I guess these are the C-band repack things. Suncast, if you want. We got a few more pictures to get through, so let's get through them. What are we looking at here, Mark?
Now, if you remember the image that we saw pre-filter install, this is the filter installed. So, what we were looking at had probably 8 or 9 carriers that were highly visible where the red dot is in that area. And once the filter's on, those are gone. So this is what the spectrum looks like. Once you put the blue filter in, 60% of the carriers are completely gone, and they're 60-70 dB down.
Of course, right now what the filter is doing, it's getting rid of carriers that you may not need to pick them up, but they're desired carriers, but they won't always be desired. There's going to be noise there and carriers from cell towers nearby.
That's right. But if you're a radio broadcaster and you put the blue filter in, this is what you're going to see. You're going to see all of those television carriers down below 4 gig are just gone. And this is how you're going to keep the 5G from interfering. So now you got a bandpass filter. So you're just seeing those carriers that are in that 4 to 4.2 if you're a radio. And this is one of the things besides all the pre stuff, we really want to show what the spectrum looks like before 5G hits in December. Because if you have an interference issue and you have to go to Verizon or T-Mobile or to the FCC and say, hey, look, you guys are causing a problem. Of course, they're going to say that. Trouble's fine leaving here, right? So you're gonna need some documentation to make your case that, hey, this, you guys have to make this right, because this is my content, this is my radio station's programming, this is the sporting events that make us money, or this is the talk shows that are critically important. And there's even, formats. Westwood One provides formats, and all that stuff is critical and cost. It's the cost effectiveness that keeps radio stations on the air. If they start having to buy, DS3s and T1s and stuff like that in to get content via IP, it's just gonna multiply, because they're gonna have multiple services coming in there at the same time, and it's gonna slow down their station's internet, and then you start to lose outages. And this has worked for 35 years, and it makes your station money, and you gotta protect it. And part of protecting it is doing this documentation. So if you've got a satellite meter or a spectrum analyzer, and you're going to do it yourself, don't forget the documentation.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yep. What's next? Suncast?
What's next? All right. And then we go back, and you can see the filter in the LNB in this. We actually take another dish pointer image, right, from the feed horn. So looking out towards the sky from behind the feed horn. So we catch a little bit of the filter in the LNB. And so we take a, just take another shot. It's all for our files. And when we do this for a customer, you know, they have access to those files. We put them on Dropbox. And, but, you know, pictures, you know, images of what you've done, you know, weatherproofing, condition of the dish, you know, anything you can do. And it's, you know, it's easy to take, you know, 20 or 30 good pictures to put in your documentation.
That app, what's the name of that app again? Dishfinder?
This is dishpointer.com.
Dishpointer.
Yep. You can, and we actually use it on both the computer because we can look and see, okay, when we show up at the spot, looks like we're going to need to be looking towards the guy wires. You know, we can see that from the Google Earth picture that they use. And then we have the Dishpointer app on our phone. And, you know, you can pull it up. And it also, it's not just the picture that's great, but if you look down below, it gives you, you know, latitude and longitude, where you're at, the heading, the elevation, which satellite you're looking at, and what the polarization skew is. All of that shows up there.
Do you find it to be pretty accurate?
It's really accurate. You know, I mean, it gets us really close.
In Greenville, Mississippi, when the radio services all moved, what, from that real far west satellite, was that one?
AMC-8.
To where they are now, which is
SES-11.
I had installed the pole for the dish just a couple of years prior, and we bought a bigger dish, and I was worried that where the dish was going to have to aim, it'd be too close to the side of the building, and it may not fit, or a little bit of the roof overhang may actually cover up where the satellite was, at least for part of the dish. So I got it was either that app or a dish pointer or a similar one. It may have been dish pointer, and I got out there and I looked at it and I thought, you know what, it's going to work just barely.
Yes, it's going to work,
and it did. It worked great. It worked absolutely great.
Oh, we've walked into places where, you know, it's going to, you know, where we can tell it's going to bump up against a building like that, or it's not going to bump up against a building. We had one in Mississippi. We were looking at it and going, you know what? Somebody put razor wire right alongside this thing, and we're not going to get far enough right to move to the new bird. So we had to have a pole adapter and get up, you know, 10 feet in the air and get above the razor wire. So, you know, there's site surveys are great, you know, or virtual site surveys. We do that a lot where we'll ask somebody to take an iPhone out and we'll have a list of questions and videos. We'll do a Teams meeting with them live and we'll have a walk around and, you know, our guys do this for a living. So, you know, they're experts and they can help them figure out, okay, you know, let's put it over here or let's put it over there. And, you know, saves the customer a lot of money, just a little preparation.
30 plus years ago, I was doing a lot of satellite dish installations for Q paging. And these were the cheap, flimsy, mesh dishes, but I was doing them all over Arkansas and Tennessee It got to where if I got on site and knew where north, south, east, west was, I could tell you it's going to be right there. And sure enough, I was amazed at how accurate that my sense of just, it's going to be right there. And sure enough, we'd point the thing and it was right over the branch that I said would be. So my question though, is, I'm not bragging on me. I am bragging on me. But what do you and your guys kind of get that same sense as well when you go to point at a dish?
You know, when you're out doing the same satellite over and over again, you get kind of close. The big thing that you get good at is presetting the polarization because, I was over here. So you can preset the polarization before you move to a new satellite because, hey, at the last place, I was right about here. And so you get really good at that. I love the spectrum analyzers and the sat meters and all this kind of stuff that we have today. But, you know, I was doing dishes like you, you know, early on. I mean, this was in the 1980s and everything was analog and I didn't have any satellite meters. And, they used to have headphone jacks on the analog receivers Mm-hmm. And I'd take a headphone jack and I'd run 100 feet of zip cord outside with a pair of headphones.
Yeah.
And I'd be moving that like I was DXing, you know, I knew the station I was looking for. I just had to find her.
It seems like I was aiming satellite dishes, and I would always go, okay, there's Dr. Gene Scott. We're going to go two birds over. You remember?
Exactly. Exactly. And I was always looking for WSB had the Braves network, and for some reason or other, it would come in better than the one I was looking for, which was right next to it. And I would just listen for, oh gosh, what was that guy's name that used to do middays at WSB? Oh gosh, can't remember his name now. He was funny. The Fun Seekers. I can't remember, but he was hilarious.
Hey, we're going to take a quick break and be back with a couple more pictures to end the show. And Mark is going to have a tip of the week for us. He didn't know that until right now, but he's going to have a tip of the week for us. So we'll be back with that. This Week in Radio Tech, our 552nd show is brought to you in part by our friends at Angry Audio. And I just happen to have some Angry Audio stuff right here. I want to show you something. Angry Audio, Mike Dosh and his team of designers, well, he's a chief designer there, but folks that work with them as well. This is something that you probably wouldn't use in broadcast a whole lot, but you certainly could use it in recording studios. You could use it in broadcast. This is an access panel that gives you easy access to either AES EBU or analog XLR connections. And on the back, look, it's got all these RJ45 connectors on the back. And these are wired actually in different ways. If you've got to run analog audio, use certain jacks. If you're using AES EBU audio, you use another type of jack. Or you can have this I think this is a called a Tascam standard here, where you have this D-sub-25 and it breaks out to XLR connections. So there's lots of different standards that exist on the back of this thing. And I just show you this because it's just one of the things that you may find interesting. If you go to the angryaudio.com website, you can take a look at all the different pieces and tools and boxes that Angry Audio designs and makes and provides to broadcasters. One of those that I really like is this headphone amp right here. And this is easy to install, you know, four screws. It's got little rubber feet right here, so you can screw it right up against there. It's not going to wobble, even if your desk is not quite straight. On the back, it's got your audio input and a loop through. It's the Studio Hub standard. Also, you can inject power at one of these or just take power on the Studio Hub standard, and you can daisy chain several of these together. It also has this nice curved feel here to it. So I always say you won't snag your pantyhose on this headphone amp right underneath the console, under the desktop. Great headphone amp. And of course, all the Studio Hub adapters. These make life easy when you're wiring, especially in an audio over IP environment, when most of your audio nodes, blades, whatever you have, use the RJ45 connector for either analog or for AES EBU. They have long cables like this that have the male RJ45 on there, or like I always got used to using, just a standard size, about a 1 foot adapter cable to go from XLR to RJ45. And then just choose however long of a patch cable you need. Make your own or just use existing off the shelf Cat 5 patch cables to get quality audio, balanced left and right analog audio, or balanced AES EBU audio from equipment into and out of your audio over IP devices. Really makes wiring a studio fast and easy. Man, I could tell you stories, but I rue the day. One day I forgot to buy one of these that had RCA connectors on it, and I spent, you know, a good 45 minutes with my soldering iron, and I certainly was out of practice. And these keep you from breaking out the soldering iron. Check them out and go to the website, angryaudio.com. You can take a look at all the products. Look at all these products they have here. Yeah, just all kinds of adapters, things you need to wire up your studio, headphone amps, also adapters to get your GPIO in and out of various different devices. Button panels, yeah, the whole gamut right there. Thanks a lot, Angry Audio, for sponsoring This Week in Radio Tech. We sure appreciate you. And you'll appreciate Angry Audio, too, if you go there. Hey, and our show is also brought to you in part by Max Connect Wireless. Gary Morrow is here to tell you more.
I'm Gary Morrow, Midwest Regional Director of Engineering for Alpha Media. When I first spoke with Josh Bone about Max Connect, he told me they'd work great for remote transmitter sites where connectivity was a challenge. And you know, he's absolutely right. We even have sites where we're using this as a backup to our STL using MacConnect's dual carrier option, and it works perfectly. We also have times where we need to be able to get out to a venue where it's kind of challenging because everybody and his brother is trying to stream video at the same time, like at a big sporting event. And you know what? Our data gets through every time because it's prioritized packet data. It works for us. It'll work for you. MaxConnect. Check it out.
I'm holding mine up too, just like Gary was. MaxConnect, this is the modem, prioritized wireless 4G data. And you get a fixed IP address. You see mine right there? Oh, can't see it. Okay, good. Security is enhanced, and the stuff works. It works really well. I was talking to Sam Wu the other day. He's the guy that does remotes from the New Jersey Devil Rays and just loves these MaxConnect boxes. Thanks a lot, Josh Bone and MaxConnect, for sponsoring This Week in Radio Tech. All right, we got time for another picture or two, whatever we got left. And my guest is Mark Johnson. Mark, what we got left here in terms of pictures? What did we go all the way through them already?
No, I think there were a couple at the end. He was about to show. There's one. All right. So, yeah. So this is your completed 5G filter install and repoint, and you've got the filter in between the feed horn and the LNB, and this is a Prodlin 3.7, you know, that's what it should look like. You know, a little extra cable out there, just you know, for service loop type stuff. And but you know, a couple of things. I don't know if you want me to do the tip of the day yet, but you know,
sure,
one of the things.
Yeah, go ahead. A couple of things
you would do that are in this shot. Okay. Uh-huh. On the filter, when you put the filter in, you're gonna have a gasket, a waveguide gasket between the filter and the feed horn. And then you're gonna have another gasket between the filter and the LNB. And so before you know, bolt these down, you want to put that gasket in the groove where it goes. But what we do is we get a little bit of that clear silicon and we put it on that gasket before we put it together. And what that does, it gives you some extra weatherproofing, because if you get water down in that C-band feed, you'll wind up, you know, having attenuation issues and losing signal. So there's weatherproofing in a sense on the filter between it, where it connects on both the LNB and the feed horn. But then also you want to weatherproof that RG6 connector that goes onto the LNB. And you know, back in the day when you and I first started, really what we had was that goo stuff that you'd put on there, and it would waterproof it, and then you wrap it with tape, and it takes forever to get that thing off if you have to change the LNB. You got to cut it off and scrape that stuff off. Well, what we use today is something we call Tommy tape, which is really kind of a self adhering kind of bonding tape, and you can get it at like Tractor Supply. It's usually in the battery section for Tractor Supply, but you pull that stuff, you stretch it, and you wrap it around there real good. The great thing is it's not, it doesn't have an adhesive on it, but it kind of bonds to itself. Mm-hmm. And then you'll wrap that all the way around the fitting and then up over the connector and back onto the cable. And then you'll cover it with some black electric tape just to protect it from UV. And, you know, that'll last years of waterproofing. And if you have to change the LNB, you know, lightning damage or something like that, and you need to get that connector, all you do is cut that Tommy tape and the electric tape off, and it just, the whole thing comes right off, and you just start over. And the Tommy tape's a couple of bucks at Tractor Supply or somewhere like that.
I will put that in the show notes. I do have a question about the technique for, you said put the Tommy tape on, and then you wrap over that with electrical tape, right?
Right.
Right. Is there a technique that you should use with the electrical tape to prevent it from actually holding moisture in it, accepting moisture in and holding in it? Because I've taken electrical tape off and seen, hey, there's water under here. What do you do to avoid that?
Well, we do the same thing that we do with the Tommy tape, which is we constantly layer it over itself. So, you know, it's almost like a finger wrap or something like that, where, you know, it's about, each wrap covers about half of the previous wrap. So you're constantly layering it. And we also pull it tight too, just like we do with the Tommy tape. The Tommy tape, you got, if you don't pull it real tight, it won't adhere to itself. So you have to pull it. If somebody was an athlete, it might be very similar to how they had their ankles taped. You know, they pull it real tight and get it good and tight and limit the motion. Well, you're doing the same thing here. You're pulling it tight so it adheres to itself and you limit the ability for water to get in there.
Good deal. Hey, Suncast, I'm hearing some audio. Thank you. I don't know if Mark was. Okay.
Nope.
Suncast, I'm hearing some audio. I don't know if you can fix that or not. Huh. How strange. Don't know. Well, listen, we're going to wrap the show up and we're going to go because we've done it all. Mark Johnson, we'll put a link to you in the show notes, but tell us where we can reach out to your company at.
The best way to reach us is on the web at www.linkup, LINKUP, communications, S at the end, .com. So linkupcommunications.com. And if we can help you, go to the website, email us, call us. We have a form on there where you can fill out a form and we'll be emailed that we need to get back to you. So,
okay, good deal. I'll put that in the show notes and thank you very much for all your advice and the dates and stuff. And you know what? I've got some articles by you and about you. I'm going to link those in the show notes as well. So if you want a little bit more detail, just look at the show notes along with the show. Hey, we got some great shows coming up. In the coming weeks, Frank Foti is going to be with us, I think, next week. Tom Ray is going to be with us as well. Jim Grum Graham. We got a hilarious show coming up with Jim Graham. And then we got another show about drones. We have an ex-military pilot who's doing some fantastic drone data collecting on new TV and FM installs and making sure the patterns are what they should be. And it's really good. I've heard this guy talk and you're going to enjoy it as well. Thanks so much to our sponsors. And thanks so much to Suncast, our show producer, for doing a great job. We appreciate you being there. And, Andrew Zarian as well for being the founder of the GFQ network, where you'll find this and other great podcasts. We got to go. Tell your friends about, This Week in Radio Tech. We'll see you next week. Bye-bye.